It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, answering your questions. You can call us in on the 800 line. You can also reach us on our local numbers in Onslow, 353-4674. Carter & Craven, Pamela Jones, 247-7282. And joining us this morning, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Ben.
Hope you're doing well today.
Doing just fine.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, I think we're going to spend the next couple of weeks, maybe even 3 weeks, on probate and estate administration.
Okay.
There is a lot of confusion around administration of an estate, and it begins with, of course, what I'm talking about, or what we will be talking about, of course, is just, you know, what happens when someone dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is the settlement of an estate? What does it involve? And we begin this topic by just talking about some of the mysteries that are out there. Now, there's a lot of literature that talks about, you know, Ben, avoiding probate. And how do you avoid probate? And let's make sure that we transfer all of our assets out of our name and into a trust, so as to avoid probate.
Right.
And so let's start with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Wes and I, the law firm, you know, we do a lot of trust. So we are trust lawyers, if you will. Okay. So we certainly don't have an axe to grind against creating a trust. But there in the state of North Carolina, there is no reason to create a trust for the limited purpose of just simply avoiding probate, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find some other kind of spoke out there to hang our hat on other than just simply, you know, the need or the want to avoid probate.
And there may be plenty of other reasons.
And there may be. There are tax reasons, there are incapacity reasons, there's protect asset from nursing home reasons. There are lots of reasons to have trust. But let's not just create a trust so that we avoid our clerks of court and the probate process, because the probate process in the state of North Carolina is not burdensome. There is not a probate tax, if you will. There is some probate fee that the state of North Carolina imposes, but it's most reasonable. There is not the delay that you have in some states where it takes, you know, many, many months or several years to settle an estate. There's not the wait in line that happens in more industrial and populous states. You know, in North Carolina, you know, our clerks of court are very much available, and an estate can be moved, you know, very expeditiously through the system and without a lot of delay and without a lot of cost.
Mm-hmm. All right. And so, again, it's that phrase that is so often used, and you may see it in a mailer that comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
You may see it in any number of ways about avoiding probate. Let's sort of take that one off the table and look for the real reasons that you do those things.
Yeah, no question about that, Ben. You know, and, you know, those mailers do go out. You know, mm-hmm. we see those mailers, and actually, you know, we have attended some of these, you know, seminars,
mm-hmm.
Usually given by non-lawyers, when we're, you know, they're out trying to sell basically these trusts,
mm-hmm.
you know, put your assets in the trust, avoid probate, that kind of thing. Red flag goes up when you see those. I mean, really, you know, if you're talking about putting your document or putting your assets into some type of legal document like a trust, you really need to have your own personal mm-hmm. attorney involved in that.
Indeed.
You know, I mean, even it goes so far as to, my goodness, I mean, you can go to LegalZoom, for example. Well, you know, they provide a lot of documents, simple documents like wills and mm-hmm. powers of attorney. They kind of stay away from those trusts because you really need an attorney when you get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as Cecil was saying, I mean, you've got to have a reason for going into a trust. And in North Carolina, just avoiding probate is not a good reason. Many states it is. If you do a Google search on, you know, avoiding probate, revocable trust, that kind of thing. Well, there's a lot of information out there, but as we know, the internet is worldwide, worldwide web, you know, and in New York.
Yeah.
That's the kind of what
and
they
we
do.
We have a lot of people that retire from states that may have some very
we do. This is an area where we really have to look at, you know, put the apples in the apple basket and put the oranges in the orange basket, Ben. I handled a file recently with clients who had the parent was here, but the daughter was from Michigan, and she was a savvy client, which is wonderful to have, and had a savvy investment advisor, which again was a good person on the team. But early on in the file, there was a lot of angst about the cost. And finally, when I got to the bottom of it, I realized that what this client from Michigan was thinking was that in Michigan, there is a statute that provides for the gross estate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there is a sliding scale local probate tax applied based on
the gross
estate. And it was considerable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was $20,000-$30,000 on this estate.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally to that, there was a sliding statute that if, in fact, an attorney was involved, that was, in fact, what the attorney fees were.
Mm-hmm.
Over and beyond an executor's commission, I was astonished. I mean, I looked at it for a while and I thought, wow, you know, I mean, we're talking about $40,000-$60,000 between the attorney fees and the probate cost right off the top. Okay.
Mm.
Now, no wonder everyone in that state is advised to transfer their assets to a trust.
Right.
And to go seek legal counsel to do this, and that just simply is what you do in that state. I mean, I think our folks know that that is something that everyone does in the state of Florida, in the state of California, in the state of New York. These are classic states that Wes and I know about, where always when clients come in from those jurisdictions, or we're dealing with children from those jurisdictions, their guard is up a bit, because
mm-hmm.
they have heard about the excessive cost that exists in the probate arena in their particular state.
So again, that's something that we just need to always emphasize, is that just avoiding probate is not the reason. But
right.
there are many other things that go on with administering an estate.
There are. Now, probate, Ben, is, I like to call it the orderly transition of title, changing title.
Mm-hmm.
It can be just as simple as the fact that a mom and a dad die. There are some accounts that are joint with them, with right of survivorship at the bank. There is a house that's tenants by entirety, which transfers to the surviving spouse. But there happens to be a car that's just in the husband's name. There happens to maybe be a stock account or a few stocks that are in the husband's name, maybe with the company that he once worked for.
Right.
There maybe is some life insurance. There's maybe a IRA that has a beneficiary. What one does during the probate process is it begins by taking stock of these various assets and what the title to the assets happens to be, again, whether or not they're joint
mm-hmm.
or whether or not they're individually titled. And then, of course, kind of with some sense of pecking order, simply item by item change the title over to the surviving spouse, or if not to a surviving spouse, to the children. If that's the case,
mm-hmm.
if we're now talking about the second to die. And so we just have to begin by understanding it's very simple that when we die and we have assets that are in our name, you know, those assets are no longer going to be able to stay titled in our name.
Right.
And the law must provide an orderly manner for this title to be changed. Otherwise, my goodness, Ben, everyone would be in there
sure.
claiming that CD and claiming those few stocks and
mm-hmm.
laying
that property
laying their hands on that
yeah.
Corvette.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And whatever the case might be. So it begins by the executor under the will taking control and dominion over the assets by and through what is known as a letters testamentary.
Mm-hmm.
That's issued by the clerk of court.
Right.
After he or she reviews the original document and finds it to generally conform to the state law of North Carolina, and then admits that document to the probate, to the probate court.
And those letters of testamentary are so important because they open a lot of doors for
they
executive.
Are. That's the ticket. That's the permission slip.
Mm-hmm.
And if for some reason there is no will, then rather than those letters being called letters testamentary, they're now called letters of administration.
Mm-hmm.
The force and effect of them are the same, but the bottom line is that rather than having an executor, which is a named person in a will, if we don't have a will, then the court has to appoint an administrator. And an administrator is many times also a family member. We should say
mm-hmm.
that. There
mm-hmm.
is, there are guidelines
right.
in the North Carolina statute, preferences, if you will, as to what and who the clerk should consider. And certainly if there is a surviving spouse, if there is a elder son or daughter, those are going to be your first priorities in terms of appointing an administrator. Now, you get beyond that, Ben, completely, if
mm-hmm.
you've got a will, a well-written will that appoints an executor. Then that's going to be the choice of the court.
We'll have more to come in just a moment. Our phone lines are open for your questions, too, on this or other matters, legal matters here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Again, their website is harvellandcollins.com, and you can call us at 800-818-2255 or one of our locals now to ask your question here on Let's Talk Legal, part of Coastal Daybreak on Tuesday mornings. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on the Talk Station. You can call us at 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-5674. We're talking about estate administration today.
We are. So the first step, Bill, is analyzing the will,
mm-hmm.
analyzing the family relation, literally by law, the
right.
heirs at law, whoever they happen to be, if there is no will.
Mm-hmm.
And then qualifying either the executor or the administrator under the law so as to obtain letters of administration or letters of testamentary.
You know, one of the questions that comes up a lot, I hear from people who've just had this loss is how quickly do they need to act on these things? It seems like the death certificates take a while sometimes, and there's some other things that just seem to be a little slow in coming. They want to act on some of these items.
I would say on average, we normally meet with the family within, say, 10 days of the death, maybe
mm-hmm.
2 weeks. But, hey, if it's a month, 2 months, that's okay as well.
I mean,
it's usually not within a day or two. And you're right. You know, it might be 7 to 10 days, 12 days before we get the death certificates. And we really need those. You know, of course, we get those from the funeral home before we open the estate
right.
or right around the time that we're opening the estate.
We have John in Emerald Isle who's on the line with a question here this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes,
good morning.
Sir. This is a Florida-based, I hope you feel qualified to answer, but my father was a resident of Florida and passed away, and he had his assets in a trust, and I'm the executor, or co-executor with my brother. But anyway, everything was fine except for his desires, his beneficiaries, included his sons and daughters and his grandkids, but he had a stipulation that the resources wouldn't be dispersed until the youngest was 25.
Mm.
Well, the youngest right now is only 15. Is there a way to make partial distribution or close it out in its entirety early? All the beneficiaries are in concurrence that they would like to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and the trust was set up in Florida.
Right.
I understand. John.
Yes.
The first thing that a good lawyer would do is to review very, very carefully the language in the trust agreement, the wording in the trust agreement, because the trust agreement is the roadmap, and it's the guide, if you will. And there are lots of provisions, maybe even in the boilerplate, of the document that I would be looking for in terms of, you know, the collapsing of the trust if for some reason it were de minimis or for some reason it's not no longer serving its particular purpose or transferring of the trust assets to the guardian of the minor children. So there are lots of trust provisions out there in the trust manuals, if you will, that we lawyers know about and that we follow that could potentially address this kind of factual scenario that you present. So the first thing that would be done is that the trust would have to be looked at very, very carefully and reviewed. And I have to say then right behind that really is the guideline, okay? And if the trust doesn't give us some freedom then to collapse the trust then that's a bit of a problem. Okay, now it doesn't mean that's completely a problem that we cannot overcome, but at least we then know, for instance, if we find some provisions been in the trust that allow us to use mm-hmm. an out to collapse the trust, then hey, wonderful,
right?
Okay, we've gotten a good result for this client pretty easily. But if for some reason the trust is very tightly drawn and these out provisions are not in it or cannot be reasonably interpreted in it, then it might be that there would be two avenues that I think. One would maybe be, yes, a complete and total release, waiver, settlement agreement signed by all of the parties relative to collapsing the trust. The problem there is going to be, and I don't mean to be the problem guy this morning, but, you know, a minor child can't sign a settlement agreement.
Have to right. Have a guardian appointed.
So we'd have to have their guardian either appointed or sign it for them.
Mm-hmm.
There also certainly would be, and this would be true in Florida as well, there would be the ability to have some court intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly simple. It's a friendly lawsuit, if you will. Sometimes that's what Wes and his litigating lawyers call it, a friendly lawsuit,
mm-hmm.
to have some court supervision over the collapsing of this trust. Wes, right. You've talked a little bit more about that.
Well, I agree completely that we have to start with the language of the document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we look at whether there's any revocation language or any language regarding amendment or any language mm-hmm. regarding discretion of the trustee to disperse everything. Okay, we start there. Well, then we kind of get to more of the litigation mind here, and I'm
right.
thinking, okay, well, if everybody is on board with regard to dispersing what is held by the trust, and as Cecil said, we all sign off on that. Now, we have to make sure we dot our I's and cross our T's as far as the minors having guardians.
Yes.
Then if we
there may be more than one. It was just the youngest one, 15.
Right.
Yeah, there's just one that's a minor.
Okay. Well, we may be able to put that in place, disperse the funds, and then my question is, who would have standing? Who would then have legal standing to challenge that?
Right.
Right.
Nobody.
If everybody's
because
there.
Everyone signed off on it. Every party to this transaction has agreed to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the likelihood that anyone would have the legal right to come forward and challenge basically busting the trust, you know, is very low
mm-hmm.
and probably just not even available to anyone if they sign away their rights. So, okay. Where there's a will, there's a way. And if we have everybody in agreement, then we probably would be able to mold that clay into something that that would satisfy the desires of the family.
So for the first step here, would it be to have a guardian appointed for the minor?
First step would be to sit across the table from an attorney who knows what they're doing.
Right.
obviously, that didn't do that step one. It's a very poorly written document, and in terms of examining it, I don't know if the guy was lucky to get out of law school that put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, is it possible that the trust could make loans to the beneficiaries?
My friend, to the language of the trust.
Yeah.
To the language of the trust. And
so you need to bring that document to another attorney and take a look at it.
You're right.
And if the language isn't clear, then the answer is that we need coverage. We need to protect you as the trustee from any kind of liability if you make a loan. Okay.
All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate the call and good luck with that. And we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. Remember, you can go on the website and listen to past shows at harvellandcollins.com. You can call for that appointment at 252-726-9050 and more to come in a moment. Welcome back here on the Let's Talk Legal, and following up on John's questions there, there's still obviously more questions to come.
So. Absolutely. John has great questions, you know, as the trustee of this trust. And,
mm-hmm. Or he's co-executor.
Well, he said co-executor. I'm assuming he's trustee as well. We didn't get to that point.
Right.
But nevertheless, what he needs to know is that it is without charge mm-hmm. to go to most attorneys and have attorneys look at the document and then give you a roadmap for what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really no risk for John to come in and, you know, meet with Cecil or me or any other lawyer who knows what they're doing in the world of trust
mm-hmm.
and deal with that without any risk. And the trust would be the attorney's client as well. So
the trust
is paying the attorney. It's not coming out of course, John's pocket. Mm-hmm. So.
Ben, what comes to mind also is just to loop all the way back around to the beginning of our talk. And I know it's so hard for our listeners to really, we'll talk more about this next week and the following week to get a real handle on this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good information on our website about trust. I don't mean to sound like not a proponent of trust because we prepare a lot of trust at our office.
Right.
But isn't this interesting? Here we see that notwithstanding that there is a trust,
mm-hmm.
you know, there are questions, there are concerns, there are liabilities, there are issues about interpretation issues.
Mm-hmm.
So see, a trust does not solve all of the issues concerning the orderly and efficient transferring of assets to the next generation.
Right.
It is not, you know, the salvation out there.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And so, you know, it's kind of like sometimes people are in these trusts because they read that they need to be, they think that they need to be, but yet here we hear from John,
mm-hmm.
you know, that notwithstanding, you know, there are issues here. For instance, if it had been a probate estate, I might add,
right.
some of these questions would not be questions
mm-hmm.
because there would be guidelines within the state law as to exactly what would happen to the share of the minor child who would be a beneficiary.
Especially
in his
with a well-written
estate.
Will. Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. So what has to happen is that at the front end of a file,
mm-hmm.
during the initial consultations with a good lawyer, the decision is made based on the totality of the circumstances, the state in which we live, the circumstances, the nature and kind of the assets,
mm-hmm.
like you were mentioning, Ben.
Right. Uh-huh.
Are they land? Are they stocks? Are they IRAs? And then a decision is made. Do we go with a will or do we go with a trust or do we even go with a combination of the two?
Mm-hmm. And again, all of these things are complications, obviously, but also things that you deal with all the time. They're complicated to us, but maybe not so much to you. You kind of see where these things get organized and the pieces of the puzzle fit. So if you need to have that kind of advice, that sort of help, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins at 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City. Call 252-726-9050. That's 252-726-9050 for harvellandcollins.com. The right advice at the right time.